How you guys doing? I'm Graham McCubbin at Cub Golf on Instagram, and this is my main man,
Kenny Palace at KGP Golf on Instagram.
And this is the long par four second hole.
See the theme in the names we're coming up with here?
It's just going to keep rolling.
What do we do after 18?
If we play at Royal, we could play the 19s. And then we'll call it a day. So we've got some interesting topics that are kicking around the world of golf this week.
Absolutely.
Which, yeah, we've got a few good topics this week. So the first one we're going to kind of talk about is the aforementioned world, is it Premier Golf League or World Golf League? I have no idea what they're calling it.
It is the Premier Golf League.
Premier Golf League.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
sounds too football-y to me.
Yes, it does.
Could come up with something better.
And by the sounds of it, it's going to be similar to what happens in football.
Well, yes. I have had some insider knowledge given to me because, you know, you and I are people in the know, so we have our ears to the street or to the range. And
yes.
I've been told that a certain Mr. Tiger Woods, it didn't take long to get him in, has been offered something in the region of $100 million a year to play in this tour. And there's also been an offer for Phil Mickelson, which isn't as much as that, but it's still a high number. I heard $40 million a year, but that's unconfirmed. Obviously, so is the Tiger one.
Yeah, so this is where we're going with this, because if you're giving guys $100 million just to play, you don't need to turn up every week.
That's
true. You don't need to bring your A game. You've already won.
Yeah, I agree to a point, but I still think that someone like Tiger would still want to win. Like, he doesn't need the money now anyway. Money talks, obviously, but he's out for trophies.
Yes, he still wants to show that he can compete with the best.
Yeah. So,
but then
there's that.
Where do you define this Premier League of golf having the best players, because they paid for them? Are all the players going to go there? Is that how they think it is? If we pay the best players, they're going to come and play in this league, even though, like, are they still going to win money if they win a tournament? That's what I'm interested in.
Or is I would imagine, like, they have to, but I don't actually know, but I'm guessing they're trying to get some appearance fee money in to bring in the big names, and then everyone else
then
that wants to play in it, they'll
follow,
pick up checks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's still a lot of details to be ironed out.
And like you said earlier, where does this stop? Because if you just keep throwing money at something like this, what happens to the PGA Tour and the European Tour? Are they going to lose their best players? Lose everything that makes these tours brilliant?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the PGA Tour respond to this, because I think it's fair to say that in the last 10-15 years, the European Tour has lost a lot of its best players to the PGA Tour.
Yes.
I think for good reason, to be honest. Like, obviously I'm proud of the European Tour, but when I watch them playing a tournament in, I don't know, pick a country, Belgium, and there's fewer people out there watching it than you get at a club championship final at your average golf club.
Yes.
It's not very inspiring. Whereas if you watch the PGA Tour, they have big galleries every week.
Yes.
So I can, and that obviously then that brings more money in. The European Tour is at a disadvantage because they're trying to sell TV rights to different countries. Whereas in the US, you only have a couple of suppliers fighting for a piece of that pie.
Yeah.
So that's more money comes in that way, of course.
Oh, completely. And like you said, if you've only got, like you say, the PGA Tour, its main audience is American.
Yeah, of course.
It's their tour. This is where the golf is played. It's not like here in the European Tour where It's in the UK 1 week, it's in Belgium, it's in France, it's in Spain, it's in Australia, it's in like Asia. It travels so much that, I mean, they're trying to attract audiences all over the world.
Yeah.
Whereas, like you say, them, like the PGA Tour, you've got America, it's already there. They're just traveling around their own country playing golf.
Yeah.
And they're getting a guaranteed fan base because people aren't actually, it goes to most of the major states.
Mm-hmm.
Or a few times, like you've got a few events that are held in California, you've got the kind of California swing kind of happening right now, kind of that way.
Yep.
And then it comes to, you get the East Coast swing with Florida and everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're guaranteed big audiences there because it's to go to places where golf is renowned. Like so, just recently when it was at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, the crowds there were nuts.
Yeah, it's
and
it's
that
brilliant.
Is what is driving it. That's what's driving that PGA Tour. And pardon me, I don't know how a World Golf Tour would fit, like a Premier League Golf Tour would fit into this.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is that the European Tour have lost a lot of guys to the PGA Tour. And if someone comes along with the right offering here, the PGA Tour is going to have to go through the same thing and they're going to lose a lot of guys. Now, one of the ways the European Tour tried to hold on to players was by putting on Ryder Cup qualification type things, like, you know, Paul Casey kicked up a fuss about it.
That kicked off quite badly, didn't it? Because he never got in 4 years ago.
Yeah, and whilst he's good, he loves to kick up a fuss. He's a pain in the arse. But, you know, I understand what the European Tour were trying to do there. So the PGA Tour might have to do the same thing. Yep. And also they have a power play on majors. So before we came on here, we were discussing this, that if, you know, the PGA Tour and the European Tour have, I would imagine, quite good relationships with the governing bodies, USGA and RMA. So if they said to them and sort of squeezed them on not offering world ranking points and stuff, then maybe that would stop players going, because like you've sort of said, for guys like Tiger, for Phil Mickelson, what they want is trophies. Of course, money helps, but Tiger's after he's 18 or 19.
Would the wins actually count as being...
Well, who knows?
Because this is completely like uncharted territory. Tiger's got his 80... Was it 81? 80? I can't remember.
It's more like, than that.
He's got his, but that's his PGA, just his PGA Tour wins.
Yeah.
Then he's got his WGC wins, he's got his European Tour wins.
82.
And it all adds up. 82.
Yeah.
So, like, he's got that, that's just PGA Tour wins.
Yeah.
Like, that's not including his World Golf Championship Tour, like, wins, is not including his European Tour wins, that's just PGA Tour.
Have you ever seen the advert for the PGA Tour where you've got, like, I can't remember who it is, but one player comes on and he says, "Do you know how hard it is to win on the PGA Tour?" And then the next guy comes on and he goes, "How hard it is to win seven times?" And then it goes up to Tiger and everyone's
like, it's like Phil and Rory and
Jordan Spieth.
It starts with somebody who's won like one tour event and then kicks up to like. And then it gets to like Dustin Johnson, and it's like Phil Mickelson, and then it's just like Tiger.
That's a great.
He's won more than all of them combined.
Yeah, it's mad.
It's crazy, but like you said, I don't think the RNA and the USGA and all these, they're gonna come together, and they might just go, "Well, you can go and play in this."
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't count towards your ranking. It doesn't count towards your like open qualification, because a lot of the European Tour events are open qualification events. Mm-hmm. So you win one of these, or you finish top two or top three, you get an invite.
Yep.
And it's the same if you win on the PGA Tour, you get an invite to the Masters, which is guaranteed.
Yeah.
You top 50 world ranking, I think, and then it's invites from PGA Tour wins, European Tour wins, amateur invites from amateur events. And are they going to then go, "Oh, we're going to have to up the field and invite people who've won on this Premier League world of golf?"
Yeah. There's proper disruption. And I actually feel that the European Tour has the most to lose out of this, because
yes,
in recent years, I think that the PGA Tour is a better tour than the European Tour now. The standard of golf, be it manufactured or not, by the way they set the courses up, it yes. is more exciting to watch. And even for guys getting sponsorships, being on the PGA Tour is worth more than being on the European Tour.
Make you a lot more money than it is in the European Tour.
Yeah, and actually it's equivalent. So that the Korn Ferry Tour now is seen as the equivalent to the European Tour in terms of sponsorship status. That is not good for the European Tour.
It's not. It's not good at all, because that is their feeder tour. So then that's classing the European Tour as a feeder tour for the PGA Tour as well. It's like putting it on an equal level. And like, you watch the guys playing on the European Tour, and granted, once they get to a certain level of status on the European Tour, likes of, I think the next person to probably leave the European Tour is Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah, he looks and like he's on the cusp.
That would be a big loss for the European Tour, because he is one of the main attractions to go watch.
Yep.
And I know to keep his Europe, like, I think they only actually have to play 13 events a year to keep the card.
Yeah.
Well, not to keep the card, but to, yeah, I think it's, they've got to play in so many designated events a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're playing on the European Tour and the PGA Tour, you've got to play 13 events, I think, on both. Or I think it's worked out something different, but I think it's something like that. And that's a lot of golf. That's like pretty much, yeah, 26 events a year. And then I think every year they've got to pick a new event to keep playing. So if you're the likes of your, until you get to a level of Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, where you don't actually need to worry about that anymore, because you're going to get an invite because of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys have to like knock their pan in just to keep their tour. Like they do, like,
yeah,
I reckon Tommy Fleetwood will knock his pan in. And like, so John Rahm is coming and playing a lot of European Tour events because he wants to be kept in the loop for Ryder Cups. He wants to be kept in loops for the race to Dubai and all these kind of things, because that's where the money is. I think he comes over and plays the Rolex series events. Mm-hmm. And I think that's about it. But he's now an honorary member of the European Tour. Same with Patrick Reed. And like, I don't know why they do that. I understand why they do it, because it gets crowds and people coming to come and see them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually no need for that. They can just give them an invite.
Yeah.
Like, they don't need to make them honorary members of the tour for that year, or give them a tour card. Because if you put big enough prize funds up, these guys are going to come over and play. But then again, that's what's happening with this. You put big enough prize funds, your guys are going to go, well, I'm out here to make a living. I'm going to go play in that.
So if you had to give me one short soundbite on this topic, what do you think this will do for golf? Positive or negative?
I'm going to say,
as I like to
do. I'm going to say it's going to be negative.
Right.
But I don't know if it'll be negative for golf overall. I think it'll be negative for the tours. It's probably going to be brilliant for golf, because it's a lot of cash injection and money injection. But then the downside is, if you're one of these players and you're getting paid like an appearance fee, you don't need to actually play well to win. You don't need to win.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you turn up, you take your appearance fee, and you head off. You play your couple of rounds, miss the cut. Oh well, I got paid anyway. And that's where I think it's a bad thing, giving guys money for just turning up.
Yep.
Because, like, so the PGA Tour, you've got the guys who turn up every week and grind out every week and make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're going to start going to guys, well, I'll give you $1.5 million to complain, that's more than what the winner's going to get. So what is the point in trying to win? It's like, there's no element of trying to actually chase the win if you're already getting paid enough to win it.
Yep.
What about yourself? What would you think?
I think it provides another layer of stratification to golf. I'm not surprised it's come along, given that PGA Tour and European Tour were set up so long ago. And the European Tour has shown that there is a need for an international tour, because let's be honest, that's what that is. You've now seen the PGA Tour, which was always the purely American tour, branching out. It's gone near to Canada and Mexico, but it's now out in Asia.
Yeah.
So
that's money. That's money.
Of course it is. And there's huge potential for growing markets in Asia. And you know, we see every year the bonanza that happens when you have the Desert Swing in terms of money. Yeah. The crowds aren't huge, but the money that's involved is. So yeah. I'm not surprised. I see what you're saying. I think it could be good because it could give more young golfers the chance to get onto the European Tour and build up.
I never thought about that angle, because if it takes away, if a lot of the players, a lot of the main players head off to play on other tours, there's spots for other guys to actually get their chance on the European Tour, which is still probably going to have the same funding and the same sponsorships.
Yeah, you would hope so. And, you know, I can't imagine Rolex leaving the European Tour. That's quite a partnership that's been built up for many, many years. So I'm going to be optimistic and say that it will help. But I do feel that it's really down to the major tours just now to manage this and make sure it does work. It's on them. And I would say they probably have to work with us, because if there's enough money and enough of a backing behind it, it's going to happen. So it's in their interest to actually try and make it work the best they can make it work for their own sake.
They've got to make it work for them.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I read something about, is it Gary Player was talking about it?
Oh, he's always got something to say.
That's exactly what it said in here. It's like he's not one to shy away from his point out. And he's pretty much saying, like, the players remember where you've made all this money. Like, don't just discard the PGA Tour where you played and earned your craft and learned your craft and earned your money for all these years, just because somebody's like waving a carrot in front of you, going, come and take more money.
Yeah.
So, because it's like, how much money do these guys actually need?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I see that, you know, we're probably going to end up with Tiger being the first billionaire sports star, so it's cool that golf gets that. But more money in the sport should bring more people into the sport, and that's not a bad thing either.
You would hope so.
Yeah, I do hope so. I think it will.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say good.
You're gonna say good. I'm gonna sit on the fence. I see the aspects of it being good, but then I can also see the downside.
Of course. Yeah, like, no, of course.
People turning up to tournaments and then just collecting a paycheck, and like, you don't have to play your best because you've already won. And that for me is like, well, why bother?
Remember though that Tiger was picking up appearance fees larger than the prize pot for many years.
he's been doing that his whole life.
So yeah, this is his life.
that's been his life, but. Yeah. I don't think it's been a lot of the life for the guys that this tour might be trying to attract.
Yeah.
So that could be, like, that's where it comes in. I don't know. If somebody was paying me $1.5 million to go play golf next week and to try and win, but if they've already paid me $1.5 million, I'd be like, well, I'll turn up, play well. And ideally you'd want to win, but if you don't play well, you don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas these guys, they want to win.
Yeah.
And if they don't win, they don't get paid. But if you don't win and you've been paid, like, it's like a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Like, which sounds terrible to see that as a negative, because everybody loves a win-win situation where you can't lose. But if it's at the detriment of viewing pleasure and watching a tournament that is like exciting, like, I wouldn't be for that.
I see what you're saying, but we are talking about a group of people who, if you said, I don't know, longest drive wins a fiver, they're going to burst themselves to hit the longest drive.
Yeah.
And they don't need the fiver.
Yeah, I just have to have more trust in my golfers. I think that's what it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess we'll see. So it's an exciting time to be alive.
Yeah.
In the golf world.
In the golf sphere.
Yeah.
It's a great time. So also as well, yeah, go for it.
Well, I think you're about to say the same thing. We've got the publication of the RNA and USGA report into distance. It's an interesting one. So this is something that's really quite close to my heart. And to me, golf is, for many reasons, the most special sport out there. But one of the reasons it is the most special sport is because the Open Championship can be on Royal Troon, and literally 2 weeks later, we can go and play the same course. Now, if you're a football fan, you can't go out and play, I don't know, at Ibrox or wherever.
This is exactly my thoughts as well. Like, you can't do this anywhere.
It's incredibly special. I would say that maybe motor racing is the only thing that can compete. But then you're not doing it in a Formula One car, so I can even go out with the clubs that they play to an extent on the course they play. You know, we can play really get as close to it almost as they can. And that's so, so special. But these guys are beasts, and I don't think people realise just how far they hit a ball. So the fact
they don't, I think it's different in America though. When you watch them hit a ball, I think when they come to like Scotland, the UK, the ball goes far, but it doesn't go as far as it does in America because of the because of the heat and the humidity here, and we don't have the like the warm weather that makes the ball travel as far. So I think when they come here, they actually look a bit more normal.
Yeah, true.
If you understand what I mean. Like, when you watch it on the TV and they're hitting, like, 380-yard drives, like, you're not going to see anybody do that here in Scotland.
No. Depending on the wind.
Depending on the wind, yeah. You might get a wind and it's, like, downhill.
Yeah.
Links course. In the it might run. But, like you say, it's fascinating to watch them hit the ball that far.
Mm-hmm. And the sound. Like, it just sounds different.
Sounds different. It looks different. And do you want to know what amazes me?
What?
They do it every time, nearly.
I know, it's mad. Did you ever see the one, I think it was Stenson, I might be wrong, and he was on the range at the Open, and he was hitting love heart shapes with the ball tracer?
Yep, he was just curving one way and then curving the other way.
So that's pretty special. But equally fading it and drawing it.
Yep. And it's going to be, it's an interesting thing that they've said that if things, they've not said that it's damaging golf. They've pretty much said if things keep progressing the way they're progressing, it is going to damage golf.
Now, do you think that the big boys at Callaway, Titleist, whoever, Ping, have been involved in this and said, please go easy on this? Because let's be honest, every year, and there's one brand that's a particular culprit of this, they give us a paint job, they maybe give us a new name, and then they tell us the driver will go 15 yards further. But
that's every club manufacturer.
There's some that are a bit more honest.
Like the top two or three club manufacturers do this every year.
Yeah.
Regardless of what is happening in the world, it's becoming like
the Maverick. Yes. That is a flash.
That's a flash with a new paint job and a new name.
And it's like, come on,
It's still got the jailbreak system. It's exactly the same. It's just got a restyle.
Yeah,
I think so. There's no physical gains or enhancements.
Yeah.
Because I'm friends. You're friends with as well with Drew Parsons, who works for Wilson.
Yeah,
and he even said to me, he goes, look, he goes, companies bring out clubs every year because that is what has done. Mm-hmm. He's like, and it'll only be every 3 or 4, maybe 5 years where a significant enhancement is made.
Yeah,
he's like, he even said this to Sally. He goes, it's every. Every 3, 4, 5 years, he goes, that is when a major breakthrough comes in golf and something changes. And me personally, I think the golf ball creates more of a change than the drivers.
Yeah, I would like to have seen this study that they've been doing, and if they could have taken, you know, they've got robots and things, and they could have done a real scientific study of modern golf ball versus a golf ball from 10 years ago, then, but a consistent driver, so a 10-year-old driver, in that just hitting those balls, and what difference does that make?
Yeah.
And then you could have had modern driver versus old driver with a standard ball. And I think you're probably right. I think the golf ball would be something that has contributed most. Because let's be honest, driver technology has kind of hit the glass ceiling. All the things we hear about, all the big breakthroughs that you hear about are often things that have been out before.
Science.
Yeah, well, Boeing
helped. It's Boeing, and it's like aeronautical science, which is helping them to try and streamline things.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter how much technology you put into that golf club. It's the person swinging it.
Yeah, but they don't want that's something they don't want you to know.
That makes the difference.
Yeah.
Hence, point in fact, do you watch Rick Shields' golf videos?
Occasionally.
Have you watched his recent one that he did with the boxed calorie set?
Nope.
Go watch it. Because he went to like a Walmart or a big kind of place like that, if you know what I mean. He bought a boxed set of Callaway golf clubs, which included a bag, a putter, a driver, woods and irons for £550. I think it was £550.
Decent.
This is all Callaway equipment.
Right.
He then played a round of golf with it. And then he tested it against their brand new clubs. What was the difference, distance-wise?
I imagine it's negligible.
From you're paying, like, the putter was in it, was an Odyssey putter that was out so many years ago, and it's, like, was worth, like, £100 when it came out, and it's now in this setup. And it's a driver. It's just a Callaway, a standard box, standard Callaway driver, and Callaway irons. Right. So if you match this Callaway driver that you buy in a cheap £500 set, which is cheaper than the Maverick driver, what kind of distance would you be looking for in comparison?
Oh, 30 yards, but straighter. You know, you want it to be more consistent, better off center hits.
Yeah. Well, he was like, because he was pretty much, he got 10 yards of a difference. That was it. Nothing else was thinking about. Granted, he's a professional golfer and he knows how to hit. He'll be able to play any club on the course.
Yeah, but then would you not expect him to see more of a difference then?
Yes, you would.
Because your average hacker is going to have so many off-center hits that it probably doesn't even matter what's in their hands. No offense, chaps, if you're listening.
But he was pretty much like, like, what's the deal? What's the deal with this Callaway? He's like, this is your brand new top of the range. Yeah, you should go watch the videos.
I need to watch that.
It's phenomenal. And you're just like, yeah, that's just a £500 box set of Callaway clubs. And it competes with their £1,700 Maverick irons and driver.
Because I'm a huge Titleist fan. I have been my whole golfing life. My first
golf
full
ball?
Set.
Or clubs?
Everything. My first full set was Titleist. Hand-me-downs from my dad.
Lucky you.
I know.
I think my first full set was a Hippo.
I mean my first adult set. I had Mitsushiba Junior set. And then I believe my first ever half set was a company called Precision Made. Never heard of them, but they did me well. Anyway, Titleist have always had a special place in my heart. One of the reasons I love them is because they are, to me, one of the more honest ones. I'm sure plenty of people will disagree with me. People have their opinions about golf brands. Cool. But, you know, they don't have this annual release cycle that a lot of brands do. Yeah, it's 2 years, but it, to me, still feels better. And there's something about that, you know, I do get annoyed. I get annoyed by TaylorMade, for example, when they do M1, M2, M3, M4, M5, M6, and basically just change the colour of it.
Yeah.
I would say that this year, the Sim Driver actually looks different. They've put in that new sort of soul plate thing at the back of the head.
That soul plate looks completely different.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's good.
But it does.
Yeah.
But Yeah.
But it does frustrate
me. I don't go into the science of it.
No. No, I mean either. And I'm sure there will be engineers out there that can explain why orange paint on a Maverick works better than green paint on a Flash. But
yeah,
it feels like they're just taking advantage. I know their businesses, Callaway, for example, are listed in the stock market as our Titleist.
Yeah.
They've got
shareholders. They've got to make money, and that's what these companies are good at, because they sell you the dream.
Yeah. But do you feel that people are hitting it too far?
Me, tour? Personally.
On tour. I've seen you hit it, you're not hitting it too far.
I know, I'm not hitting it too far. You should tell that to the people I play golf with on a weekly basis. I've got a wee list here. On a weekly basis, the guys I play golf with on a Sunday, they think I hit the ball too far. But
it's always fun to play with people that think that.
Yeah, it is. It's great because it's like you step up onto the tee and they're hitting a 7-iron and I'm hitting a pitching wedge.
Yeah.
So, like, that in comparison makes me sound like I'm hitting a professional level of distance when I'm not. Like,
yeah.
I'm not hitting. Granted, I can. Like, I've played with Round Rowan with a couple of guys who do play on the tours, but. Like, I can probably hit my pitching wedge the same distance as he's hitting his pitching wedge, but there's a big difference there. He has control. He knows where the ball's going to go. He knows how to make it stop, spin, turn over in the air. I don't know how to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it with the same club and getting the same distance, whereas I'm just stepping up there, giving it everything I've got, and hoping to God it goes straight. And that is like the big difference when these guys, they're so physical and so strong. And as you're seeing that now on the PGA Tour and on the European Tour, these guys are becoming athletes. Golfers never used to be athletes. Golfers have never been athletes.
Yeah.
And you're watching them now. You've got your Brooks, you've got your Rory. I'm even going to mention Bryson, because Bryson is actually changed his shape and his form physically to hit the ball further.
Mm-hmm.
And you even see like Phil Mickelson, he's working on that, he's working on his fitness.
He's a beast now. He's lost so much weight
right at the moment. He's lost all this weight, he's doing the swing training with the super speed, and he's getting the power, he's getting the distance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what he wants, which is what helps him, pardon me, compete with the younger guys on the tour.
And that's an interesting thing that I think, you know, Sam Snead was one of the first golfers to talk about fitness, and flexibility was his thing. Gary Player is obviously a big advocate of fitness, and was when he was a golfer, a pro golfer. He tells everyone he does 6 million sit-ups a day, or whatever he does.
I love,
you know,
the
talk about a pointless exercise, but punches himself in the stomach. It's like, well done, Gary. Anyway, sorry, I don't mean to hit Gary Player too hard, but he does get annoying at times. But, you know, so the golfer has evolved, as well as the clubs, as well as the golf balls. And I've not read the report, but is that being properly assessed and addressed in this report? Because it is a big contributing factor. Now, your average golfer hasn't hit the gym more, so that's another thing that changes this. And it's really important that we remain able to play the golf courses that the top pros play. That is first and foremost. But you know what? If these guys are working hard in the gym, they're becoming better physical specimens, then they are going to hit it better. They are going to hit it further. And even if you gave them the equipment that Nicklaus and Palmer and those guys were hitting back then,
they're still going to get around the course.
But they're still going to hit it further than they hit it, because they're physically better now.
Yeah.
And the swings have changed. Like, people, if you look at how Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka swing the club now, Justin Thomas does it in a different way. These are new swings. This is a modern golf swing that didn't actually exist then either, and creates more power. So Brooks and DJ do it by sort of shutting the face a bit, de-lost in the club in a controlled way, as well as just being beasts. And then Justin Thomas is like an elastic band that you just let go.
That's so, a bit like myself. But my ball's not going to go straight. I'm like, I'm not a big guy, but I can still get the ball. Still hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what fascinates people when I'm out golfing with them, because I'll step up onto the tee, like I said, I'll pick out a pitching wedge, and they'll look at me and go, well, if he's hitting a pitching wedge, I can hit a pitching wedge, I'm bigger than him. And I'm like, it's nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all about like how you swing. You play your own game. These guys are playing their game, which is worlds away from what we all play. But like you say, we can still go play the same golf course as them and still come out with the same output.
I always love the ego trip on the golf course. He's hitting a 7-iron, so I need to hit a 7-iron. Like, well, no, because you don't hit a 7-iron.
You don't hit a 7-iron like me. it's funny. Brilliant to watch. And it's like, look at the size of him. I'm double his size. He's got a pitching wedge in his hand. It means absolutely nothing. Because you don't create the speed and the elasticity that I can create because of my frame. Mm. It's like, you're not going to be able to get enough power into the ball to get it there.
Yeah.
Which people don't understand that. It's not all about swinging at it hard.
Seem to have this thing that their self-worth is attached to what iron is in their hand. I had when I was younger. Of course I did.
Everybody does.
But you need to get over that fast.
Yeah. Oh yeah, completely. It's like, play your own game. Just because I'm hitting this, does it mean that you need to? And does it mean that you should try to? Because if you can't reach with it, the only thing that's going to come out of this is you're going to be in a hazard. You're going to have a chip shot to get to the green. Play the club that's going to get you there, and ignore everything that I'm doing, because I'm playing my game. And people need to remember that. And then when you go and watch these guys, they're playing their game. Like, this is just it's just a big game to them, and it's their job, and it's their job to hit it straight as far as they can down the middle, pop it onto green, two putts, walk off, and keep going.
But I think people don't realise that they're not trying to hit it as far as they can. You know, if you ask most of them, they're swinging about
80%. Yeah.
So they're not even pushing it, and they're hitting it that far. So you shouldn't be pushing it when you're on the golf course. But
that's when you see the likes of the guys who hit the long drives. Is it Kyle Berkshire? Seen him?
It's like, mad. But do you know what?
That little dance that he does, like the rocking motion, and then steps into it.
I don't know if they try it on, right? But see when they do that follow through where they snap the club back, like it bounces off. I hate that. That annoys me.
But like, Tiger's known for doing that.
I know, but I like it when he does it. Because I like him.
There's a few of them do that though, when they're like, they hit it really quick, and they pull the club back down really quickly as if they go, oh, that's went miles. And you're like, but that had nothing to do with the swing. It's like, but yeah, I love watching Kyle Berkshire when he's like, he does that kind of little rocking motion, and then and then he steps into it. And the distance that these guys hit the ball, like, everybody thinks these guys in the PGA Tour are big hitters. These guys absolutely wash the floor with them.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see one of these big hitters harness that power, that they could hit it straight all the time, and bring that to the tour. Like, can you imagine how crazy that would be for a guy to be able to hit a drive like that and have a short game to match it up?
I wonder if the top tour guys ever speak to these guys
for tips.
Yeah, like, because I'm sure there's things that they do that even with a controlled swing could gain you some distance.
Oh yeah, possibly.
So it'd be interesting if they ever reach out to them and try and figure out what from their specialism they could take into proper golf.
Because it's just fascinating. There's the British guy who won as well. Can't remember. Joe Miller, that's the one.
He is a beast.
He's a monster.
I wouldn't like to bump into him at a dark range. Wow.
Like, he's a monster. And you see these videos, like, he posts on his social pages, and there's just three kids in the background just going, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, that overswing is like, the club almost reaches like 360 degrees with his like backswing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like monster. Almost the whole way round.
I think his arms are the size of my thighs.
It's just a unit. So yes. And but like, how long can you continue to swing like that? That's what fascinates me. As we've all seen, Tiger Woods has had his problems.
Yeah, but that wasn't really down to golf. That's not, that was down to his Navy SEALs training.
Yeah, that's down to everything else and
yep.
the way he treated his body. And I think, like, how long can these guys constantly keep that, like, this level of trying to crush the ball up?
Yeah, it's probably a short career, but like, even the distances that the girls are hitting it, like Troy Mullins, she puts it out there. Oh, she's mad.
It, like,
she's great for the game.
Yeah, she is. Like, I loved what. But, when we were over in America the last year, I was actually watching the Long Drive Championships. And it's brilliant to watch.
It's exciting.
Because it's like what we mentioned the Olympics should be like. Mm. They've got a time limit. They've got so many golf balls.
Yeah.
Go hit them. And it's like, it's now or never. It's like you're face to face with somebody. Can you pull it off?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we thought maybe like Olympics should have in a little event like that. Which is
I like that head to head in the moment, do or die kind of thing.
Yep, you get 10. You get 10 swings at it.
So exciting.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's see you do it.
10 swings.
And if you can't,
pop one down the middle. If you don't do it, you're out. So like, yeah, see you later. Yeah, oh, it's crazy where it takes you from like the distance the game is going, and how these guys think that if it keeps going this way, what do you think they're actually going to do? Do you think they're actually going to put a plan in place?
No.
Control the golf ball, make courses tighter. I saw a really fun like thread on a social media group that I'm a part of on Facebook, and it was like, what does everybody make of this long like the distance thing in golf? I mean, just make the courses harder. my initial comment was, doesn't matter how hard you make the courses, the guys are so good at their short game.
Mm.
Like, you can make the roughest stick as you want. These guys get out of it. They get up and down from it.
Mm.
Like, I don't think it matters how hard you make the golf course.
Yeah, because I don't agree, though, with making them longer and longer.
No,
and longer.
I don't agree with that at all.
I like it when we have courses that are tight, that take tactics, that you're not standing up and just picking out the driver. We see that occasionally in maybe older courses that you would have like the Open Championship on or something.
The links courses, they can't do that because you lose a golf ball. You can easily lose the golf ball in these courses. Mm-hmm. Whereas,
and that's golf. That's the way it should be.
Yes.
But again, if you look at other sports, so if you look at baseball, for example, the Major League Baseball have realized that the way to get the audience involved is by showing pitchers that can pitch the ball at 100 miles an hour and batters that can put it over the fence every time they stand up there.
Yeah.
And I think golf's actually decided we should do the same thing. And part of me thinks that it's because it takes a long time to watch around the golf and they're actually looking for highlights. It's a highlight reel.
That's what they're trying to show on the TV.
Curation event. Yeah. So they've done that in baseball because a ball flying over the fence makes good highlight reel. And a 350, 360 yard drive is also doing the same thing.
Yes. Have you ever been to a baseball game?
I've been to many. Dropped a foul ball and been booed by a whole section, which was highly embarrassing.
But this is what I always find fascinating about it, right? You go and watch professional golfers. These guys are amazing. Like, hands down, everybody who makes it on the tour is gifted in some form of golf. But see, when you go and watch professional baseball players, like, you'd think for professionals they would hit it more than they actually do.
Well,
but then again, you've got somebody throwing a ball at 105, 10 miles an hour at you. How are you meant to hit that?
Dancing around, it's moving about, and Yeah, I mean, I went in a batting cage once and a ball came at me at 90 miles an hour. And not going to lie, a little bit of poo came out. It was horrendous.
But that was the only thing that struck me when I was watching it. I was like, I've been here for like 3 hours. I've seen 5 hits.
Yeah.
Like, it's just foul ball, move a base. It's like, or you, it's like foul ball, strike out. Or you're like, it just, yeah, you're out. And you're just like, hit the ball. Like,
yeah. Well, let's see, you try it.
I know. But that's what I always find. These guys are professionals. This is what they do for a living.
Yeah.
Like,
if they're hitting like 3, 4,
the percentage of their batting must be like crazy. It's like how many hits they actually have and how many home runs and just getting to bases. You just think, well, if this is my job, you'd think that you'd be able to hit it more often. It was just always my initial thought, because when you see golfers watching them make birdies, they can make birdies no problem, but then they can also make bogeys, which is kind of like they're striking out. But it was just a weirder thing, and I was just like, I just always had this vision of going and watching like a few home runs a game, and where that just doesn't happen.
No, and I think it happens more now because they kind of want it to happen. Like, there's the talk of is it the juiced ball or the juiced bat? Mm-hmm. There's controversy around that the ball was going further now. So this is where I think it all comes into that. Watching around the golf, watching 72 holes for the night, like, there's only a few people that like to sit and watch the PGA Tour or the European Tour from start to finish. So they need to create highlights that keep people in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like a football match where there's stuff happening all the time, or a rugby match where there's action all the time.
That's why you get a lot of ads.
Yeah, and I just think that whilst I can see what the RNA and the USGA are trying to do, part of me feels like it's a bit short-sighted, because golf isn't normal. It's not a normal sport, and there's so much to this that I think they're being overly simplistic. Yeah. Now, what could happen potentially would be that you give... So one thing I always thought about would be if all manufacturers created the same golf ball. Now, your Titleist player still gets a Titleist stamp. Callaway player still gets a Callaway stamp, but they all essentially play the same ball.
Give them the best ball possible.
Of course, but then they all play the same thing.
And then everybody's playing the same, and it's a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Now that would mix it up completely. That would, like effectively work with all the companies, go, look, we want the players to play one ball, then everybody's in a level playing field, and see what happens.
Yeah. But then these guys aren't going to want to do that, because then why would you go out and buy a Pro V1, for example? So I think that the manufacturers have an awful lot of power, and the RNA and the USGA, whilst they will want potentially to make changes, they're probably not going to be able to, because like most sports now, the power isn't with the governing bodies anymore. It's with the TV, with the sponsors.
With the fans.
Yeah, and could you imagine the RNA and the USGA turned around tomorrow and said, right, we're limiting the golf ball, we're going to make it a 75% ball, and that's us now.
Nobody's going to buy one of them.
No. And then, so then you let the amateurs use the proper ball.
Yeah.
Now you're just creating a minefield. So, I just think we have to celebrate the fact that, whilst that is frustrating that you now have 7,900 yard golf courses, you have par fours that are over 500 yards. That's tough for your average golfer.
But for these guys,
can we not celebrate the technology that's got to the point where they can do that, and the fact that golfers are now athletes and they can achieve these distances?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a different sport. They don't play the same golf we play, and as long as we can keep playing the same courses as them, that's all right.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. That when golf was invented, probably never in a million years did they think that it would go the way it's went and the trajectory it's had. And like you say, they would be able, people couldn't destroy golf courses back then 20, 30 years ago the way they do now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few guys who've came through in the past 20 years, 10 years, who have been able to destroy golf courses. But that all like comes round to like being that perfect round. Like everything's went well for them that day. Every swing has been perfect. That doesn't happen on a weekly basis. Guys don't rip courses up on a weekly basis. Like you might get one good round out of your four, and then people are like, ah, it's too easy for them.
Yeah.
But it's not, because if it was too easy for them, they would all be playing that way.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you'd have minus 60 winning tournaments.
Yeah, like if like it was that scores. Easy, every player would be under par every week. But it's not based on the course a lot of the time, it's based on the player. If the player's not playing well,
yeah,
like you're playing against your, golf is a game against yourself, and it always has been. Like you're just put on a course, that's your playing field, that's
your canvas,
that's your canvas. You're just creating the artwork to get around it, and it's all on you. Like people blame their equipment, people blame, like you go out there with amateur golf is brilliant because people are like, oh, it's my putter, this putter, that driver, and you're like, it's nothing to do with the, nothing to do with it, it's you. And like, if I hit a bad shot, I know it's me, I know it's, oh, that driver again. Like, that's my mental state of like, me and my driver don't get on, but when me and my driver do get on, it goes great. But when we don't get on, it goes terrible. But that's nothing to do with the driver. Like, that's me. It's like, I don't get when people start going, oh, I need a new driver. No, you don't need a new driver. You need a lesson, or you need...
Yes, like,
You need to fix something. It's like, the equipment is not the main factor for your golf going wrong. It is you. You can't, like... You can't magically make something happen with a new set of clubs, which is
and
like...
That's a really important point, because guys will spend £500 on the latest whatever driver. Imagine you put those £500 to a block lesson with a PGA Pro.
Yeah.
You will learn how to be a better golfer with what you have. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, what you have is probably good enough. And you will make a sustainable change to your golf. You will become a better golfer just swapping out. But you know, people don't want to put the time in. Often people don't have the time.
People are looking for a quick fix.
Yeah. And the new whatever driver gives you that. But the PGA Pro, your local pro, can really make a difference with that kind of money. And they deserve it, because they've learned their craft.
Oh, completely.
And, you know, these are the people that should be getting that money.
And it's fascinating to think that they're coming down on the, like the, a lot of this theory about the things going longer, and they're focusing it on the golf ball, and then they're focusing on the clubs. They're like not giving any kudos to the players who are actually, like you said, they're not giving it to them who are actually hitting it further. It's these guys that are creating that. Like,
and also if you look at the amateur game, the average handicap hasn't changed.
I know.
So all this equipment is making no difference to your average golfer.
You give me Dustin Johnson's driver, I ain't going to hit it the same distance as he is.
No.
Like, that's effectively what they're saying. Like, the equipment and the golf ball is making this impact. It's only making this impact for these guys because they're at the top of their game. It's nothing to do with, like all-round golf. This is like, you give these guys the best equipment, they're going to make the ball go further. And that's like, that's exactly what it is. And you give them my driver, he's probably put his shaft on it, he's probably going to knock it the same distance. It's like,
and you, it's the equivalent of putting your eye on Chris Hoy's bike, track bike, and saying, oh, now you'll be able to go as fast as him.
It's like, and that's what it is. It's like, that's what fascinates me about the whole, that whole study. It's like, the advancements in golf are not, it's not good the way things are going, because it's getting longer. And I was like, well, it's the guys who are making it go longer. You put it in the, put that club in the hands of any other guy in the golf course, they don't make it go that far. Because if we all made it go that far, we'd all be playing on the tours. That is the main difference. It's like, that's why these guys get paid. paid all that money, and that's why they train and they work hard for them, and that's why they have their coaches. Like, you don't give Rory doesn't, like, they always say, the adverts and everything always say that this new club's gained them yards. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's them working on their game and practicing and coaching and mind games. And everything that they focus on is what leads to the extra yardage.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much, because the manufacturers are governed by all these rules, the clubs have got to conform to a set of rules, and if they don't conform, they can't use them.
Exactly.
It's nuts. But yeah,
I don't think anything's going to change.
Nah. Go get a lesson.
I don't think it should change. Just work at your own game, and you'll see that, you know, if I use the set of clubs that I used when I was a kid, I had it further now, funnily enough, because I'm older, I'm stronger, I'm in the gym, and I've got a better golf swing than I had when I was a kid. So,
I changed golf clubs last year.
What did you get?
Ben Hogan's. A little plug for Ben Hogan. But yeah. I got my golf clubs last year, my new ones. That is the, since I've been an adult, that'll probably be the second set of golf clubs I've had.
Yeah.
And I had my TaylorMade R7s before that. And I will tell you right now, there is no change in the distance at all. Like, distance-wise, I still hit the same club. So that just shows you.
I think we're quite similar on that front. We don't change clubs often. I know I don't.
I don't change clubs often. And the only reason I change is because I'm an ambassador for Ben Hogan, and if that hadn't came along, I'd still be playing the same TaylorMades.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think it's weird, because see the TaylorMade irons.
Yeah.
They were like 11-year-old, 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And I got the new Ben Hogan's, like, that came out last year, the PTX Pros, and distance-wise, no change. Granted, the feel and the confidence I have with these new irons is completely different, because I'm actually playing well with them. And I played well with my old clubs, but it's a mindset. Like, I don't know what it is, but like, I got these new irons. They're forged irons, first set of forged irons I've ever had. The feel is amazing. You have forged irons.
Yep.
You know exactly what that feels like when you come from a cavity back to a forged iron. When you hit that sweet shot, like, there's no better feeling. And that's the only difference I have now. That little bit of confidence in knowing that when I've hit a good shot, I know exactly that I've hit a good shot. Whereas with my old irons, I didn't have that. Like, you could hit it and you'd be like, well, was it a good strike or not? Whereas when you play a forged iron that's fitted for you and you strike it well, you know that you've struck it well. It might not go the right direction, but you know you have. You know when you've hit a good shot, because you get that feel, which is... like just a weird tangent off all of that, which is these guys get that feel pretty much probably every swing.
Yeah, their mishit is not our mishit.
Yeah, it's not our mishit, and it's like, that is something they'll probably strive for. And like, you'll hit a driver and you'll feel it coming off the club face, and the best shots are the ones when you don't feel it coming off the club face.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
Which, it feels like nothing. It's like, feels like you've just like skiffed the ground. You've not actually contacted with the ball, and it's just a weird one. I just think, don't blame the equipment. If you're going to blame anybody, blame the golfers becoming athletes.
Yep. So what are we saying to this one then? Worthwhile, not adding much.
Don't pay any attention.
You're going to have the guys at the R&A rattling your door anyway.
Excuse me, the choppers are flying in. No, I get their point. I get their point that it's the only thing it's detrimental to in the golf world is the old golf courses.
Yep.
Because that's where it's affecting. And it's only affecting it when the pros are playing them. Mm-hmm. Like when you get the professionals coming to St Andrews, like you watched, was it Ross Fisher a few years ago? Shoot 61 mm-hmm. around the old course. Like, granted there was no wind and it was a beautiful day, but like that is the advancements like that these guys have made in themselves to get the ball further. Like the first hole, if they want to, they could all go for the green. 18th, they can go for the green. When that course was built, that course was not built for somebody to hit a ball from the tee to the green. Do you not agree with me?
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier about when they created, when golf first came along, and when you had guys like old Tom Morris and whatnot, and you know, St Andrews was probably a really fearsome challenge then, a proper test.
Yeah.
And now it's as long as it can be. They've run out of land.
Yeah, they've nowhere to go. Like, they're not your Augusta National who keep buying land to extend everything, like to make it longer. Like, Alistair McKenzie would be turning his grave. It's well, he designed a beautiful, stunning golf course, and they're like, well, it's not long enough now.
So I actually read something recently. It was on LinkedIn. Let me find it, because I took a picture so that I could share it today. And it was something I found really interesting, because I had actually never heard this before. So it was from Tom Doak.
Yes.
And he said, his quote is, "In golf architecture, tightly mowed grass is the nearest thing we have to a landmine. The average golfer sees acres of manicured grass and is encouraged to swing without fear. But the clever architect can utilize short grass in several ways to increase the difficulty of the course, and it will have the greatest effect on better players who recognize and fear the problems it will present. Of all the courses I've seen around the world, only a few have taken advantage of the possibilities of short grass, probably because it requires a good budget to manicure extra acres of fairways. But consider the list: the old course at St Andrews, Augusta National, Pinehurst No. 2, Royal Dornoch, Muirfield, and Ballybunion at the front. With so many new courses lusting after this sort of status, you'd think a few would try to implement this technique." How interesting is that one?
Yeah. Like, that's just exactly what
grass
we said.
Cut it's, properly and yeah. placed in the right way is enough of a hazard.
Yeah, if you go offline at Augusta National, you know you're offline. Mm-hmm. Like, you know you're in, you know you're in trouble, and you can't just like take a wedge out and wedge it to the green.
Yeah,
like that's the point. Is all these courses that they play on the PGA Tour, they can take out driver, they can hit a 350-yard wayward drive, take out a wedge, flop it to 2 feet, and sink the birdie putt. Like that's because these guys have got such a good short game. Whereas the thick rough, where's the when the USGA hold their Open every year? Like, the course set up for that is phenomenal.
Yeah,
but the players don't like it because of the thick rough.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Just
but
like
you're offline, so
you're offline. You're in it. You put yourself there. Don't go there if you don't want to go there.
Yeah,
it's like you've got the option to not swing at it as hard. Go down the middle, stay on the short stuff, and you're laughing.
Exactly. Brooks is good for that kind of statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's golf's a simple game.
It's a simple game, but it's just incredibly complicated.
It's a simple game, but it's incredibly complicated because, like, a tiny millimeter off, and you could end up in grass that's 10 millimeters higher than what you're meant to, and that's where it all stems down to. Like, stay on the short stuff. The game's simple. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you end up in the thick stuff. That's when it gets tricky.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a good way to end it. I like that quote. That's where.
It was a long one, but it was really interesting.
Yeah.
So I think we'll say that was the birdie putt.
Yeah, that was definitely the birdie putt on the long par four. Definitely the birdie putt in the long par four.
There's a lot of good stuff happening. You know, we're starting to get near the the real season opener. You know, by that I mean the Masters. It's not that far away now, and it's just the time of year where you start to get really excited about the coming golf season.
It is.
The dreams are yet to be dashed of the handicap cuts.
Yes.
So
I can't win anything this winter. I've been second the past 2 weeks, so I'm itching for that win. I don't know what it is. I'm just like for some reason I've been like the bridesmaid like four times over the winter. I've been second like four times. I just can't get that over that win line. And see,
so you're sort of like the Louis Oosthuizen of
Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like this winter season. So guys, that has been this week's Hats Off in the Clubhouse podcast. The long par four second. And just remember guys, it's always Hats Off in the Clubhouse. Always.